I thought what I would do is actually go into some of the articles that I mentioned in the update, because they are very pertinent to the position we find ourselves in today. I know that certain people are losing their jobs and certain people are having difficulties financially, and certainly those things are likely to increase. On the front of the Telegraph, yesterday's paper, was the headline that said, "Zero rates and savers paying to use the banks in a new topsy-turvy world." It says, "We are entering the twilight zone for monetary policy. The end is nigh for interest rates. Savers could soon find themselves receiving zero or maybe even negative interest on their savings." Now, this is at the time when the interest has dropped to 2%. And I think it's 1% actually over in the United States, but it's over actually 2% here. And it's never been like that since the very early 50s. And war years is what we're looking at as far as the current interest rates are concerned. It says, savers could soon find themselves receiving zero or maybe even negative interest on the savings. In other words, they're going to have to actually pay to put money and keep money in a bank. It says, "It is a new topsy-turvy world for British families, and it could last for years." And he goes on into another part of the article. It says, "It means that rates are likely to be cut to 1% and thence conceivably all the way down to zero." So if it goes to zero, it could well be that it's actually they charge you to put your money in the bank. It says, "Rates have never plumbed these depths before, so nobody knows quite what will happen." And it says, "The big question, and no one truly knows the answer, is whether even the most powerful ammunition in the armories of our government, and also governments, plural, and central banks, will be enough to prevent the next decade from being as bad as the Great Depression." And because nobody knows, you know, we're going into an area which is uncharted, it could well be worse than the Great Depression. And certainly, if you know prophecy, and you see what prophecy is actually predicting, it's going to come into a time that is never been like it before. So the indication is that the preceding time, if it's an economic crisis that actually triggers the problems, the preceding time is also going to be unprecedented. You could certainly draw that parallel. Inside the article itself, inside the paper itself, that is yesterday's paper, there were a number of articles on the subject. And there's this particular one that says everybody is worse off when prices fall. Now, it's interesting that he goes on and he starts to describe how when prices fall, then everybody comes worse off. But if you just notice the way, in fact, he introduces the article, you'll find, in fact, that stability of prices and even slight deflation is a good thing. Let me just read to you what he has to say. It says, "Deflation means that your pound in your pocket is worth more each year. In an earlier age, deflation was regarded as benign at worst. For a couple of hundred years before 1946, now 1946, you're looking about the time of Maynard Keynes and the problems that happened at that time, and I've gone into that before, you know, where fair is foul and foul is fair, for foul is useful and fair is not. But he began to introduce a completely new concept into economics, which therefore, you know, you can go ahead and have money with nothing behind it but debt. And that's what we've got at the moment. It's debt that is actually behind our money supply. So what's happening is that as the price of housing, every confidence is going down, the price of housing is shrinking. Therefore, the money that the banks think they have is going to get less. Therefore, you get a deflation. It's going less. The actual money supply is becoming less. And even though you're pumping actually pounds in, you've got to have debt to pump those pounds in because of the economic philosophies of Keynes, and therefore you've got this spiral that's going down. But he says, deflation means that your pound in your pocket is worth more each year. In an earlier age, deflation was regarded as benign at worst, and for a couple of hundred years before 1946, moderate deflation would occur over long periods of improving productivity. It was often associated with the good times." So, you know, be aware of what he's actually saying. "It's easy to see why the purchasing power of the purchasing power of people's incomes increased, and people could therefore take out life insurance policies, knowing that if the sum assured paid for a funeral at today's prices, it would pay for their funeral when they died. It was a stability within society." You're looking now back into the Victorian times. And the Victorians had a certain stability within the society, which we have not got today since the two world wars. So pay for their funerals when they died. "And businesses and individuals could sign contracts spanning the generations, knowing that inflation would not lead to either party losing out. Indeed, the economy can work better in a period of gentle deflation. If the price of housing rises, for example, when prices in general are falling, then we get the unambiguous signal that housing costs are increasing relative to other costs, and that we should think about economizing on housing. At a time when all the prices are going up, it's difficult to work out what's going on in the marketplace. So in other words, you can make it confusing, and people can do what they like. They can lie, they can cheat, they can steal within this kind of inflationary spiral that we've had. And believe me, they did. Sadly, these days are past, and now we have an economy that is adapted to inflation. The pound has had 97% shaved off its purchasing power since 1946. 97%. So you're looking at your pound today is worth 3% of what it should have been worth had that money been maintained. And where has all that money, that wealth gone? Well, the government has taken it. Or the Federal Reserve or the Bank of England and the powers that be. And the Bank of England has a statutory mandate to target positive inflation year after year. In other words, that's the way it is. That's the way they're going to make sure it remains. And this is why they're fighting desperately, because why? The Bank of England was making all that money. It was actually coining it in, because the pound in your pocket today is only 3% of what it should have been. And the Bank of England has taken the rest. They've gone ahead and they've stolen it. They're thieves. It says, all that came before me, as Christ said, are thieves and robbers. And that's dead right. That is absolutely dead right. And it's when you come into the middle of the paper and you see this article by Jeff Randall, because what you're looking now at is another event that took place in this last week, which is where the police came in and actually ransacked the offices of a member of parliament. And they came in without search warrant and were allowed in there by the Speaker in the House. And it says, as Harriet Harman, this is under Telling the Truth, is lambasted in politically correct Britain. It says, as Harriet Harman slithered on the thin ice of dissemblance, cracks in her convictions were palpable. Blinking furiously, she appeared as someone who would rather plunge into the freezing waters of ridicule than succumb to truth. Asked by Jeremy Paxman on the Newsnight to affirm her confidence in Michael Martin, the common speaker, that's the person who basically allowed them in, and yet they didn't have any warrant to be able to do what they did, Miss Harman skated around in honest reply numerous times until falling over her own feet with a sudden confession, quote, I'm not saying that I've got full confidence in anything or anybody. Now that's the basically, finally you got that out of her. It was the kind of encounter to which British viewers have become inured. In effect, a current affairs entertainment show, with a celebrity presenter posing questions and a slippery interviewee defying clarity through a fog of non-answers. That's dead right. You know, you see it over and over and over again. And it's a recent thing. You go back 10, 20, 30 years, that's not the way in which it works. That's not the way it works at all. But as a society, we have not just stopped expecting veracity from elected representatives, but we've also been brainwashed into believing that harsh realities are to be avoided. Why? Lest they damage confidence. Because confidence is everything. You can keep this bubble in place. And this is what's happening on the economic front. You've got this confidence being maintained. It says, it's as though as there's been a conspiracy between disingenuous politicians, campaigners for political correctness, and a malleable electorate to accept deliberate omissions and distortions as valid currencies of exchange for public discourse, while banning the gold standard of fact. Isn't it interesting? He's using economic terms because we're in the middle of an economic problem, which I said, read before, in a deflationary just gentle deflation, everybody becomes richer. But we've had this inflation that is taking place over the period of time since 1946, where you've only got a pound that's worth 3% in your pocket as what it should be worth. In fact, it should be worth even slightly more, because the actual deflation would bring it up that little bit more. He then goes into several examples. He says, in many levels, we are being infantilized by a progressive standard that would rather suppress inconvenient truths than confront reality. and he goes and cites several examples. One he mentions is Alistair Darling, when he came clean on the British economy, saying that conditions were arguably the worst that had been for 60 years. He was absolutely slated for it. He mentions about George Osborne, that warned that Britain was heading for a collapse of sterling if the government carried on with its present policies. Again, he was attacked as being, a traitor to the cause. And the Tory peer Lord Mancroft complained that the nurses that looked after him in a hospital in Bath, unlike those that had delivered wonderful care to him in Chelsea and Westminster, were grubby, drunken and promiscuous. And that went down like a lead balloon. But he was telling the truth. He was saying what was true. And he concluded that these nurses were an accurate reflection of many young women in Britain today. And that really got under people's nose. Really got down their call. Spring 2006, barking Labour MP Margaret Hodd warned that many white families in her constituency were tempted to vote for the British National Party because nobody else is listening to them. That really went down like a lead balloon as well. It's interesting that in this article he finally ends, and this is his last phrase, he says, pretending that a problem doesn't exist is not the same as addressing it. If you have any doubt, have a look at Miss Harman's obfuscation on the BBC website. In other words, go to the website, look at what, in fact, she actually had to say. So I did. And guess what? The little item, the little screen, had been pulled. And in this place, it says, the Leader of the Commons, Harriet Harman, has responded to questions about whether she backs the Speaker, Michael Martin. Ms Harman told Newsnight's Jeremy Paxman it was her responsibility to, quote, support the Speaker, support, unquote, the Speaker and his officials, and to uphold key principles such as protecting the rights of MPs to conduct their business without unwarranted interference. That's not what was on that interview, not according to what it says telling the truth is lambasted. Totally different. She basically, what did he actually say? It says, asked by Jeremy Paxman on a Newsnight to affirm a confidence in Michael Martin, the Commons Speaker, Ms. Harman, stated around the honest reply numerous times until finally falling over her own feet with a sullen confession, quote, I am not saying I've got full confidence in anything or anybody. And yet the actual thing has been pulled. You know, what is actually being specified and laid out within that is then graphically evidence, but when you actually go and try and find out the truth of the matter, because the truth has been removed. And it is the media are in cahoots with this. Now, I saw this absolutely blatantly one time when it was happening one afternoon. I don't know why on earth we were watching it, but there was some kind of interview with Mr. Blair when he was the Prime Minister. And unbeknown to him, a lady got into the crowd and asked a very pointed question. I mean, a really pointed question about a current topic that was of interest to absolutely everybody in a way that was really, very well placed and very well put. And he started to and then suddenly the screen went blank. The screen went blank. He says, I'm sorry, we've got technical problems. Like, we did not. But this is what, in fact, is happening. Turn over to Jeremiah chapter 5. Jeremiah 5. I say we'll have to keep this fairly short today, but I think what we need to do is to realise what God is talking about in regards to our society in which we find ourselves in, and regards to the kind of behaviour that we are witnessing and we are being affected by. And don't in any way feel that we are not affected by this. But here, in Jeremiah 5, verse 26, it says, for among my people are found wicked men. They lay in wait as him that sets snares. They set a trap, they catch men. As a cage is full of birds, so are their houses full of deceit. Therefore they become great and become rich. They are become fat, they shine, they overpass the deeds of the wicked. They don't judge the cause of the fatherless, and yet they prosper, and the right of the needy they don't judge. Now, it's interesting, they call about the cause of the fatherless. In the same paper, right opposite, right next to that opening article about deflation, or rather the possibility of the Great Depression coming again, is another article about a lady over in, which I've mentioned before on News Analysis, who in fact had about, if you put all her family together, because of she's got seven different children, by five different fathers, and she has then taken a child and had it kidnapped so that she could get reward money. and she's just being in the process of being sentenced at the present time. But, you know, the fatherless, these children are fatherless. You know, they are fatherless children, which are all over our society. And it says here very clearly, they become fat, they shine, they overpass the deeds of the wicked. They judge not the cause of the fatherless, because they've got no moral basis to judge that cause of the fatherless, to say, look, enough is enough. Marriage is marriage between a man and his wife, and a family consists of a married man, his wife, and their children. And they don't say, they say black is white and white is black. And he says, yes, they prosper. The right of the needy they do not judge. Shall I not visit for these things, says the Eternal? Shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? A wonderful and horrible thing is committed in the land. The prophets prophesy falsely. The people for predicting what in fact is to come are prophesying falsely for their own ends. And the priests bear rule by their means. From the religious quarters, it is their own ideas that come out. It is not the law of God. It's by their means. And my people love to have it so. And what will you do in the end thereof? The people themselves actually approve of this. This is why we've got the mess that we've got economically, going back to Keynes in 1947. And turn back to Isaiah chapter 5. Isaiah chapter 5. It says in verse 11, it says, woe to them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink, that they continue till night to wine to inflame them. And again, when you're looking at this particular lady, this lady who had the children, the seven children by five different fathers, she basically spent her entire time playing video games and drinking and cigarettes and so on. And the harp and the viol and the tabret and the pipe and the wine are all their feasts, but they do not regard the work of the Eternal, neither do they consider the operation of his hands. They don't recognize the Creator. He's been taken out of society. And there's your beginning of the deviancy. That's your start. And from that start, it then gets into the educational system as it detailed by Romans, and it then goes into society. And that's what we're seeing today. The society is now breaking down. Therefore, my people are gone into captivity. That's the next stage. The people are gone into captivity because they have no knowledge, and their honorable men are famished. Their multitudes are dried up with thirst. Notice verse 20. Woe to them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to them that are wise in their own eyes. They don't have anything over them. They don't have any law of God over them. And they're prudent in their own sight. Woe to them that are mighty to drink wine and men of strength to mingle strong drink, which justify the wicked for reward, take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. And that's true. That is happening over and again. Therefore, as the fire devours the stubble and the flame consumes the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness, their blossom shall go up as dust, because they've cast away the law of the Eternal of hosts. They've despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. And that is due to happen. They will go into captivity. They're setting their course towards captivity. Final scripture, Isaiah 29. Let's just turn over there. Because here in Isaiah 29, in verse 18, it says, and in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book. Because eventually there's going to be a change. There is going to be a change in society, and there will be a people that God himself should be here. It should be right here. This is why it's so important that we study these words. And when we're listening to what Mr. Armstrong says today about knowledge, about spiritual knowledge, make sure that we understand that that spiritual knowledge is what is needed for this world to counteract the things that we read in our newspapers. And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness. The meek also shall increase their joy in the Eternal. The poor among men shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. For the terrible one is brought to nothing. The scorner is consumed, and all the that watch for iniquity are cut off, that make a man an offender for a word. And that's what we're seeing today, continually. This political bafflegab that's coming out, that make an offender for a word. All those are going to be swept away. The whole stinking mess is going to be swept away. That's what God is saying here. And lay a snare for him that reproves in the gate, and turn aside the just for a thing of naught. Therefore thus says the Eternal, who redeemed Abraham, concerning the house of Jacob, Jacob shall not now be ashamed, neither shall his face now wax pale. In other words, when he finally comes up, he will see something which will not give him the shame that he would have seen if all these terrible ones had remained. But when he sees his children, the work of my hands in the midst of them, there's the church, there are the people that need to be there in the midst of them, but living with a different way. They shall sanctify my name, and sanctify the Holy One of Jacob, and shall fear the God of Israel. They also that erred in spirit shall come to understanding, and they that murmured shall learn doctrine. So let's make sure we keep our minds focused on the future. It is a glorious future, but when we see the world, and when we see what is going on in the world, and the actual lies, and the way that truth is just being, you know, lying in the street, realize and understand that the things that we are learning are there so that we can put it right.